Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net, joined remotely yet again by my soundtrack-loving co-host, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. Hey there, Charlie.
Absolutely soundtrack-loving. There's a movie we're going to start with this week with probably the best soundtrack, at least from the Disney modern era, attached to it. I know you can hear it in the background of this particular episode, folks, but there's the world's largest and noisiest thunderstorm going on right now as we record this. Rain is pounding against the window. There's thunder. I'm just going to call it production value. We got ambiance.
That's right.
Because our first, this is kind of our countdown into summer episode. We're going to, you know, May is when the blockbusters really start to flow. The tent poles start to arrive in theaters. 2021, okay, it's still weird, but there's a big tent pole we're going to talk about on this episode. And then we're also going to do our countdown. I remember for 2020, we did our top five most anticipated films of 2020. Well, about two or three on my list came out. I think I got some rollovers this time. We're going to count down our top five most anticipated films of this summer, of this, you know, the next 3-4 months ahead of us. I did my list. Hannah's got her list. We'll meet in the middle, and hopefully they don't even match at all. I love it when that happens. But let's talk about the biggest film of the week, which you should be able to see at home if you are a Disney Plus subscriber, or if you really got the itch, you can go out to the theaters because it will be there too. It's an origin story. It's a prequel of a character you already know, Cruella de Vil. Cruella is the title. And color me shocked, Han. I'm actually surprised. If Disney could pick any character to do a prequel about, to where did she come from, where did he come from, I'm actually surprised to pick Cruella, because 101 Dalmatians is not a very popular film. People know of it. They probably saw it once or twice, but they didn't revisit it. Maybe they saw it again when they had kids and Glenn Close reprised the role, but that was a remake. That was a reboot. This is new material. And so I'm actually very surprised they picked Cruella. Not the most interesting character on screen. She can be flamboyant, but flamboyant does not automatically mean interesting. So color me surprised that I enjoyed the heck out of Cruella. I had so much fun watching Emma Stone just ham up the screen, and even more, Emma Thompson get even hammier than Emma Stone does. This is standard Disney fare. They're going to Lion King her mother. You know what I mean? And so we got orphan Estella, not Cruella yet. It's Estella. She arrives in London, an orphan and penniless, meets up with Horace and Jasper. We remember them from the animated films. Actually, they're a lot more together in this film, which is probably, before I get into plot and particulars, the biggest disconnect between this setup and what everybody knows is coming with the 101 Dalmatians animated film. They don't connect. Sure, the characters are the same. Sure, there's some Dalmatians here and there. But Cruella, we're on her side. We're rooting for her. We want her to win. We want her to overcome the obstacles and be in a better place at the end. But we know what's coming. She wants to become a dog murderer. And it actually, this character doesn't set herself up to become a dog murderer in my mind. So right. I think that Cruella does have some mixed reviews going on with it. Color me on the fresh tomato side. Love it. Like it a lot. But I can see why some people are like, wait, it doesn't meet in the middle. It doesn't match, Hannah.
Yeah,
you went back and you saw the original. You went back. How does that work?
Well, so I did. I watched the 1961 animated version. Well, and aside from the fact that there are some things that it lacks the diversity that the cast and story have in these later years, but it only works. You do need to see and sit through the credits at the end. There's a mid-credit scene that actually is very important to that larger story about the two Dalmatians that show up as the storytellers in the 1961 animated version of 101 Dalmatians. So this is, you know, this is not your little kids might like this kind of Disney dog movie. Whereas the 101 Dalmatians, the animated, is really told from the perspective of these two dogs. This movie is told from the perspective of Cruella. And so it's a very different tone, and it's a campy comedy, crime drama, caper movie, all rolled into one, with a little bit of shades of Devil Wears Prada in it. You know, that's where my mind was going during the beginning part of this film, where Estella really wants to be a fashion designer, and she's got skills. She's very good at it. And she ends up going to work for the uber fashionista person in London at the time, played by Emma Thompson, the Baroness. And so she goes to work at the House of Baroness. And it's very interesting because Emma Thompson, I would say, steals every scene that she's in with Emma Stone. So I think these two Emmas both just seem like they really enjoyed, that they relished these wickedly witty roles that they were in. And so, yes, there's definitely a disconnect between this telling of this origin story and supposedly setting up her animosity towards Dalmatians and her wish to make a Dalmatian coat later on. But it stands up as its own sort of entertaining film. But yeah, I do. I was rooting much more. I was rooting for Estella / Cruella, and even her fun little henchmen sidekicks, Horace. Oh, is that thunder?
That is thunder.
Wow. So her little sidekicks, Horace and what's the other guy's name?
Jasper.
You know, and so they're literally just like your bumbling idiot henchmen in the animated version. Whereas they have a little more, I think you like them a little more in Cruella, and she's kind of using them, and they're actually very interesting. It's Joel Fry from Love, Wedding, Repeat, which I saw, but I don't think you did.
I'm the one who told you to see it. I saw it first, and I said, Hannah, go see this movie.
Oh, okay. And then Paul Walter Hauser plays Horace, and I'm like, where do I know him from? And he was in Richard Jewell. He starred in Richard Jewell, which, you know, was actually, his performance was really, really good. And he was in I, Tonya as well. And so those two guys become sort of Estella / Cruella's makeshift family. And so there's a lot more depth and depth to them in this than you would have gotten. They're just literally almost throwaway characters in I think in the animated. And so, you know, it's how and why did Estella turn evil? That's really for those who want to go see this movie. You know, you don't want to spoil any of that. That's what the movie reveals. Rest assured, no dogs were harmed in the making of Cruella. But it, you know, it sets up her affinity for design, and we kind of get some idea of how the pieces fit together. And as you mentioned, I mean, the soundtrack for this film was just in some ways incongruous, I would say, with the kind of film that we're getting. But the soundtrack and the cast, I think, elevate this film, which is why we like it. But I think it's going to go over the heads of younger kids. So I think if younger kids try and tap into this film, they're not going to appreciate it or enjoy it nearly as much as the adults who will enjoy the soundtrack big time.
Cruella is not for kids. It's PG-13, which Disney does about once a year. Remember, like Saving Mr. Banks, that kind of thing. I would let my 8-year-old watch it, and I don't think he would get anything out of it. This is set in the late 60s and the early to mid 70s, and it's filmed that way. This is a 70s aesthetic, and definitely a 70s soundtrack and late 70s. This is mod. This is proto-punk. The best songs in the film are actually not on the soundtrack. So the Zombies and the Rolling Stones, which just fit. The music fits perfectly. They're not on the soundtrack, even though the soundtrack is killer. I'm probably going to pick it up on vinyl. The reason Paul Walter Hauser is here, because, yeah, he was Sean Eckert in I, Tonya, shares the it's the same director. It's Craig Gillespie. Gillespie is not just punching the clock here. He takes his time, and he really, yeah, he has some fun with it. There's a lot of camera swoops, but there's a scene where Estella becomes Cruella. There's a certain scene where she makes this decision, and she's got this really long monologue, and Gillespie goes handheld on that, and he starts to push in on it. I'm like, wow, this is a guy who's really thought this through. I thought Emma Stone was outstanding. Yeah, it's not for kids. This is not their demographic. Now, I don't know anything about fashion. I don't know why things are in or why things are out, but I do know fashion documentaries. And I'm pretty sure this that Cruella is meant to be Vivian Westwood, because in 2018, we saw Westwood punk icon activist. I didn't know who Vivian Westwood was before that. Now I do know, and this is her. She's a punk, a London Sex Pistols groupie. So I was like, okay, I could see them doing that. Now, the Baroness, she's Anna Wintour and Donatella Versace and a bit of Lex Luthor. She's actually talking about a villain. I mean, the Baroness is a bad guy, and she's also brilliant. And so is Estella Cruel. They're both brilliant. And so, you know, Estella has this revenge arc, and I'm not going to tell you why, but she decides to get revenge. She's a sycophant. She's an acolyte of the Baroness. She loves her, wants to work for her, and then changes her tone about midway through, and it becomes, you know, focuses all this energy on revenge. I mean, imagine if she put all this energy on world peace, she could probably solve it. So I really, really liked some of the ideas where she is saying the Baroness is over. She's the past. She's a has-been. And she does all these stunts. Most of them are in the previews. That's really well made and just a good montage sequence. She's a full-up three-dimensional character, even though sometimes it veers into caricature. But she's, you know, she's a full, solid, well-rounded character. Whereas it's been a long time since I've seen the 1961 version. She wasn't. She was just one-dimensional, come on here, yell, you're with your cigarette holder, and then, you know, storm off in your cat in your DeVille, really. Cruella just works. I wasn't happy going into this. I didn't really want to sit through it. Yay, another live action, another prequel. This is part and parcel now, but yeah, huge fan of Cruella. I really recommend that. Put the kids to bed so the parents can watch this Disney movie together.
Well, and when you think about it, the Aussie filmmaker Gillespie, he actually also did, in addition to I, Tonya, he did Lars and the Real Girl. You know, that was an awesome, awesome movie. And you've got these two Emmas who can both deliver comedy and drama. So they've got the acting chops to pull this off, which is why you're right. This is an entertaining adult flick. Major drawback, though, it is too long. No matter what, whether you're a kid or a ADHD adult or me, it's simply too long. It's over 2 hours. It really had no business being like 2 hours and 13, 14, 15 minutes, whatever it was. It could have been shorter.
And, I disagree. There are places he could have cut. Absolutely. But I'm glad he didn't. This deserves, remember, you know the line, no good movie is too long. I was really enjoying this. I felt this is 2 hours and 15 minutes, and it earned every second of it. I wouldn't want him to have cut anything. It's not bloated. It's full. It worked. I mean, characters have foundation and motivation.
It's not totally bloated, but it could have used a little nip and tuck here and there. That's all I'm saying. No way.
Anything less would have been just less. Less would be less. A lot of people, less is more. No, not in this case. Some movies have to be as long as they are, and Cruella is one of those.
All right. But yeah, it's going to be a tough sell for kids because of the length and the nature of the film.
If they can sit through 3 hours of god-awful Star Wars sequels, they can sit through this.
But they might not want to. So that's the only warning come Memorial Day weekend with trying to figure out what the kids might want to see. But you did see another one that is a family-friendly option that's been out for a few weeks now that we're just finally catching up on that you wanted to plug as well.
If you don't have Disney Plus, you know, shell out the big bucks to Disney, but you do have Netflix. Jump on over there. Get the entire family together, everyone from the toddler to grandma, because you'll all enjoy The Mitchells versus the Machines. It's hysterical. But more than that, it's got heart and feeling, and it'll make you feel better about your oddball family. You know, sometimes you think, I wish my family was more normal, or more quiet, or less quirky, or less idiosyncratic, or didn't stick out in the neighborhood as much as they do. That's the Mitchells, and their teenage daughter, who's going off to college, just wants to leave them behind. Goodbye, Mom. Goodbye, Dad. I will miss you, little bro, and I'll miss you, dog. Mm-hmm. But I'm out of here. I'm going to go start a new life and reinvent myself with people who get me. And through the course of the film, she realizes, hey, my quirky oddball family is where it's at. I love them. And because it takes, you know, a worldwide technological apocalypse for it to sink in, for that message to, you know, gain strength. But it's so funny. I was laughing just as hard, if not more, than my 8-year-old. My wife was all in on it. The cat was watching. The Mitchells versus the Machines is an outstanding film, and easily, it's not even close right now, is the best animated film of the year. Much better than that Raya and the Last Dragon business.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. After you saw it, and then another friend of mine was raving about it, and he said that his 7-year-old watched it, and then he watched it again when the 7-year-old went to bed. And so he enjoyed it that much, too, because it really does work on multiple levels. And so I checked it out. And yes, The Mitchells versus the Machines is just fun, just a very enjoyable. And it's got heart. You know, it's just one of those animated ones that that just really delivers to all age groups. So yes, if you have Netflix, you can't really go too wrong watching The Mitchells versus the Machines.
And it's one that kids will be able to sit down and stand. Cruella is just over their heads. Mm-hmm. They don't get where Cruella is coming from. They will get where Mitchells versus the Machines is coming from.
Well, and the family movie that I saw that I don't think that the kids will want to see at all either is actually Let Them See Mitchells versus the Machines, because the family in Endangered Species they're not having all that much fun because they are going on a family adventure, final vacation before the kid goes off to college and the other kid graduates from high school. And they go off to Kenya on the safari. And all of a sudden, all these things happen where you realize that Dad's about to lose his job. Mom has, it's your favorite, you know, in the movies, I forgot that disaster movie we saw recently where the kid like forgets his insulin.
Oh God, Greenland.
Well, yes. Well, in this one, I mean, there's so much telegraphing from the very, very, very beginning of this film that was why some things don't work, because you just know when Mom's got to give herself the insulin shot before they head off on this day-long adventure into the middle of nowhere to try and find wild animals to gawk at. You know that you're in trouble. This is an R-rated movie. It's for, it's got some violence and really bloody images. I really, it makes me rethink the whole African safari thing. But it is an action adventure thriller. It has some moments, but it's kind of that B-list kind of cast going. So it is Rebecca Romijn is the mom in this, and her husband is played by Philip Winchester. But ironically, Rebecca Romijn's real life husband, Jerry O'Connell, plays like the not so good poacher in this film, who then ends up hunting the family in addition to the wild animals out in the safari wild world that they end up going into. But a couple of key lessons from this movie. One, never try and cut the corners by like saying, I'm going to skip getting a guide and a guard to go out with us in our little van. Don't go through a sign that says off road, no entry. Usually also not a good idea when you don't know where you're going and you're encroaching on the terrain of rhinos and elephants and big cats and all of that stuff. And make sure you carefully secure your water and your insulin and beware of poachers, especially if they're played by a guy who looks like your real life husband. This is a survival movie. It's most of the action, it's really just this family, their van gets overturned by a rhino and they're having to fight their way back and try and survive. The strangest thing about this film is that the writer and director, MJ Bassett, apparently really intended to use this as a bully pulpit film for animal conservation efforts. Like, there's a final scene that seems very forced and contrived to deliver this message at the end. And there's one of those on screen, you know, how many rhinos are killed for their horns and how many elephants are killed for ivory and all of that. And it just seems so incongruous with this film that you've been watching, this family fighting for survival and trying to, you know, to sort of patch up all the things that it's a family that has issues. They've been sort of brushing them all under the rug for a while, and all the issues kind of come out and they air their laundry and try and resolve all this stuff before they might all get killed. So Endangered Species is on digital, on demand, and in select theaters now, but apparently it's then going to be on Blu-ray and DVD June 1st. So I don't think you have to run out and see this one on a big screen, because it really is just almost like this strange Jurassic Park wannabe with a bunch of other elements thrown in, but really nothing you haven't seen before.
Yeah, I'm very surprised you watched this. This is not in your wheelhouse. And I read like the one paragraph synopsis and I knew I wasn't going anywhere near it. And I assumed you wouldn't either, because this is just not your thing. So color me surprised. You must have been bored.
And it was just one of those ones where every once in a while, it's the family dynamic in a movie and in the synopsis that intrigues me. And I always kind of watch some of these occasionally just thinking, you just never know. And with this one, it was like, it wasn't horrible. It wasn't like a really hard watch, but it just felt very, it felt kind of stale. So nothing that I would have said, oh, Charlie, you really should go watch this one.
All right, let's move on to our list. I think I actually have two on this list that are the same from I most wanted to see in the year 2020. I remember Defy Bloods and Tenet were on my list that came out last year. But let's go ahead and see, what is your, let's go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What is your number 5 most anticipated film of the summer?
Before we go to that, I just want to say I did read two articles. One was IndieWire, which listed 41 quote unquote must-see movies that several are already out and I would say are anything but must-see. So I'm taking all of these lists with a grain of salt. And The Wrap put out an article that was definitely leans more mainstream, more in my wheelhouse, that listed 33 films coming out this summer. So you've got dozens to choose from. But my number 5 is a film that, let's see, I think number 5 for me will be The Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife, which is coming out June 18th. That is a mouthful. It's a sequel to the 2017 film with Ryan Reynolds. It's got Samuel Jackson, Salma Hayek is in this one. And I look back, my 2017 review, I called it mindless summertime entertainment that was formulaic but fun. And so I'm guessing this could probably be a tie with like F9, which comes out a week later, the Fast and Furious movie. But so my number 5 is just going to be that one that I anticipate being just fun summer fluff. And that's an important aspect of summertime entertainment for me.
See, that's your wheelhouse, not Endangered Species, but mindless summertime fluff entertainment. That's the Hannah I know. That's where you belong. I remember The Hitman's Bodyguard, and I didn't particularly care for it. And I'll probably see the sequel, and I won't particularly care for that one either. But, I know it's lurking.
Yeah, what's your number 5, Charlie?
My number 5 is a documentary from Questlove, Summer of Soul, .. Or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. July 2nd is when this comes out. We first saw like a sneak preview of it during the Oscars, because Questlove is the DJ. And it's from a festival I'd never heard about. And apparently most people haven't, because they say this is something that happened that nobody remembers, called the Harlem Cultural Festival of 1969. You've got performances from Stevie Wonder, Nina Simone, Sly and the Family Stone. Check, check, and check. I'm there. Can't wait for Summer of Soul.
Yeah, no, Summer of Soul looked really good to me. That I had as my honorable mention documentary add to my list. But I would say that if we're staying in the music world, there's a couple on my list. But the one that I will say is my next most anticipated would be In the Heights, which is actually coming out very soon, June 11th. Be seeing that next week. And so that's Lin-Manuel Miranda's Broadway show before Hamilton. Musical drama about this bodega owner in Washington Heights, a neighborhood in largely Dominican neighborhood now in New York City. And he dreams of sort of winning the lottery, closing his store, retiring to the Dominican Republic. But he's got all these mixed feelings. There's romance in the air. There's a heat wave, a blackout, and lottery winnings all involved in this musical drama. And I've seen the stage musical. And I definitely have been really looking forward to catching In the Heights on the big screen.
I enjoyed Hamilton, but
they're very different. This is not a Hamilton. This is not.
No, trust me though, I'm not lining up down the block to see this because I enjoy some musicals, but it's not my wheelhouse.
But it might not be your wheelhouse, but I still think you might enjoy it because it's very much a drama. So it's. It's got way more story. You know, the story is much more accessible. Hamilton, it was different, was very unique and had the rap style music. In the Heights is not that. In the Heights is a musical drama. And I think even you might like it. Just saying, just putting that out there.
Well, my number four is a tie, actually.
A tie?
Normally, you know, and get me on any other year, it wouldn't be here. But this has come along. I've come to enjoy these films because as my son has, you know, latched on to movies as well, this is in his wheelhouse. And I've really learned to start enjoying The Boss Baby. The Boss Baby sequel is coming out July 2nd, Family Business. And July 23rd is the new Hotel Transylvania, Transformania. The last Hotel Transylvania, which is the third one, this is going to be the fourth one, was so funny. I remember watching that at the now closed Arclight, which is in our neighborhood. It was so funny, and I love The Boss Baby as well. So yeah, put these two back to back. We're going to have a good theater going experiences in July.
I just think that's funny because you always gave me such grief for whenever I would put a genre together into a tie.
And I did that on purpose. Like, wait, Hannah always does ties, and I bet she's got a tie like at least three times on this list. So I'm throwing it in there.
I did not. I have no ties for that very reason. So it's all on you this time. I think my number, where are we, three, I would go with, there's a movie that was a hit at Sundance called Coda, and it's coming out August 13th, and it's about the hearing child of deaf adults, which is Coda for short, which I just learned, and she joins the school choir, and so it's really about her juggling her passion for singing with the family responsibility she has, having a brother who's also deaf. And it's an English language remake of a 2014 French film. So, you know, we never know how those remakes will go. But it has that one. Coda has mainstream chick just written all over it. Marlee Matlin's in it, playing the mom of the deaf, of the hearing girl. And so that's the one that that I just kind of didn't really hear much about. But then when I read it on the list of things that were coming out, it made me realize that that does sound like one that would be in my wheelhouse, and that it's also got music in it, which I love. And so I'm looking forward to Coda.
I hate remakes of foreign films. However, everyone who saw this at Sundance made sure to tell everybody else how phenomenal it is. So I can only imagine the original French film was amazing. So yeah, I'll line up for Coda. This is getting tricky now because my number three is, you know, I don't watch previews and I really don't like to read about films. So this is just based off a one sentence thing. I can't tell you anything about it, except the one sentence about Gunpowder Milkshake, which is coming out August 15th. Sounds like it's in my wheelhouse. An all woman, all female hit woman squad. So Karen Gillan, Carla Gugino, Angela Bassett, Michelle Yeoh, and they're all trying to protect little Chloe Coleman from My Spy, and they're all assassins. Yep, I'm there. Took one sentence, and you got me. I'm in Gunpowder Milkshake.
I had never heard of Gunpowder Milkshake, so that is one I'm like, really? Most anticipated of the summer?
Hook it up.
That high in your
inject
list?
Inject it in my veins.
Well, I'm gonna go with my number two now that I think has, it's a little more, more female girl power stuff going on, and that is the long, long delayed, highly anticipated Marvel Studios Scarlett Johansson, Russian spy turned Avenger, Natasha Romanoff's backstory, The Black Widow. And The Black Widow comes out July 9th. And we have been waiting and waiting and waiting for this film. And it's been in the can for who knows how long. But that one's going to, I think Scarlett Johansson's just going to kick ass on this one. And I look forward to finally seeing The Black Widow and being able to see it on a big screen. Because I know they were holding off for that option and opportunity. And so, and it's been a while since we've got a, I'm ready for that next Marvel movie Avenger backstory flick.
Meh. After Endgame and after enduring all the hours of the lackluster The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I do not have the palate for Avengers at the moment. So maybe you could revive my interest in the franchise, but
go back to your milkshake movie.
Well, my number two is an honorable mention from last year that got pushed back, starring Ryan Reynolds' Free Guy. I'm really looking forward to Free Guy. Ryan Reynolds is an NPC, a non-playable character in a video game who gains his autonomy and must fight his way out. Yes, please. It looks like a live action, like Wreck-It Ralph. So Free Guy looks great.
Well, you'll get your Ryan Reynolds fix in that one while I'm getting my Ryan Reynolds fix with the Hitman's Bodyguard's wife. So that's a lot of Ryan Reynolds this summer. So that could be a good thing.
Everybody loves Ryan Reynolds. He can't do no wrong.
Exactly. I can watch Ryan Reynolds in both. I might actually want to see both of those movies. So, but my number one... This is number one, right? Drumroll.
Yeah,
I feel like, oh my goodness. My number
F9. This is going to get us. I know how much you love Fast and Furious.
It is going to be, I deserve a little more R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Oh, dear.
My number one is Respect, the Jennifer Hudson playing Aretha Franklin in the biopic, hand selected by Aretha Franklin to play her. And Jennifer Hudson, we know that she can kill it with the singing and the drama. Even the trailer had a little bit of that Dreamgirls kind of vibe going. Any chance, just the opportunity to see Hudson channeling the Queen of Soul has got to be a good thing. And I am so looking forward to that. And you had mentioned early on the Summer of Soul documentary, and I actually had a note that the two, I was looking forward to both. I'm looking forward to seeing the Queen of Soul biopic in Respect in August 13th, but even as a teaser, a taster, if you will, the Summer of Soul documentary in early July from Questlove should be a really good little appetizer to Respect.
I like biopics when they're over, when the credits are rolling, and I've enjoyed the experience. I don't like biopics when I know, okay, here we go. 2 hours, they were born, things happened, trials and tribulation, let's go, bring it on. It feels like a chore. Biopics sometimes feel like a chore. Like, I know it's going to be good, and the performances are going to knock it out of the park, and the music's going to be great, but sometimes biopics really feel like homework to me. But I love Aretha. She is. There's some albums of hers I truly cherish, but oh my god, I know I have 2 hours of a biopic in my future, but I'm gonna it's what it feels like to me sometimes with biopics. They're tough
I love
but
them.
They're great when they're over and you're like, oh, it's so good. And what was I worried about? My number one was on my list last year, and I think it was number one on my list last year. Wes Anderson, The French Dispatch.
Of course.
I don't know anything about it. I know some of the actors because they star in all of Wes Anderson films. I love Wes Anderson. And this film was just announced that it's going to premiere at Cannes. So, okay. Probably not a bad film. I think it's opening sometime in July. It seems still a little bit up in the air. But, yep, front and center, Wes Anderson. I'm here for you, brother.
I think that pretty much tells the tale of both you and I, Charlie, that respect the Aretha Franklin biopic is my number one, and a Wes Anderson sure to be quirky film is your number one.
Oh, I can't wait for it. Oh, I can't wait.
I think that's perfect, and I can't wait to see how we both like the picks of each other's. I think we have to make an agreement that we will both see everything in our top five.
We're
going to
see all of them anyway, even without making this list. These are big, these are big pictures. We're going to see them.
So we'll see which ones actually shake out to be as highly, as good as they are anticipated. So we shall find out. But yeah, anyway, I think that is a wrap for this edition of the Cinema Clash. Thanks for listening. Let us know what movies you're most looking forward to this summer. You can find us online at the Cinema Clash. Till next time, take a moment to honor those who've served and have a happy and healthy Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.